Hello, chatters. As I was setting up our recording gear, Annabelle Crabb said to me when I figured out how to do it, please, just don't ever die.
Just because I would find it really hard to work the microphone equipment for our podcast if you were dead.
It wouldn't
There'd be one or two other complications, like there not being a podcast at all. But yeah,
I'm so glad that you'd miss me so much that your first thought when the phone rang, Annabelle, I've got terrible news, sales is dead, that you'd go, well, who's going to work the microphones now? Hey, I've got a little present for you. Mick at work, who is my floor manager when I do 7:30, his wife's name is Julie, and she was doing a bit of a clean up at home, and she went through her linen cupboard and found some tea towels that her nana had knitted for her and given her. I think the year was 1975.
You don't knit a tea towel.
I mean, made them.
Jesus.
Sorry, she embroidered on them.
You're an embarrassment to the craft world.
She embroidered.
You're banned from Etsy forever.
She embroidered on them. So they've been, Julie's had them since 1975.
God, and they have just never dried a hand, these towels.
And she thought you might like them. Look at them. We'll put some photos on the Facebook group, people.
Think of like a beautiful, beautiful linen towel with just gorgeous kind of ticking stripes on each end in lovely sort of fondant colours, all my favourite colours. And, oh, my Lord, this is a proper – this is a glory box.
It is a glory box. It's full Julie's glory box. It's Julie's glory box that she's giving to you.
Oh, my – so there's one that says bride, and it's a lady in a bridal frock heading optimistically towards a church. Right.
And it's the most exquisite embroidery.
And then there's trousseau, and then there's courtship.
One.
Oh, God. Here's no, that's less rude than it sounds.
Here's the one that goes with bride.
Groom. Oh, my God, what's his penis smoking for?
It's the embroidery on the cigarette. She's embroidered a cigarette.
It's a guy whose penis appears to be smoking, but on closer inspection, he's holding a cigarette down near his region. Honeymoon. Dream home.
And what about the condition of them? They're absolutely immaculate. You'd never know they're 40 years old.
Well, guests to my home will never be drying their hands on anything less than the trousseau of Julie.
Julie's a chatter. And
it's a happy marriage, by the way. They're still together.
They are.
Very much in love.
Miraculously, having met Mick, I mean.
I know. But Mick's the guy too.
I love Mick.
Who for Julie's 60th birthday, forgive me, I hope I've just like busted out her actual age. He and the children procured 60 birthday presents for her of varying.
Pretty incredible.
Oh, my God.
And for her birthday a few before that, he organised for me, you and Emma Alberici. You were away, though, unfortunately. And he surprised Julie with a lunch with all of us that Mick paid for at a restaurant at Potts Point called The Butler, which is beautiful. And because Julie, because Mick works on our shows, you know, poor Julie has to sort of suffer through them all the time anyway. So he organised for us to have her to have lunch with all of us. But the most hilarious thing was that I had the most horrific case of gastro. I had been just crapping razor blades for a good 36 hours and I was so ill.
Here's your other birthday present, Julie. Rotavirus.
But Mick had invested so much effort into getting the lunch happening and it had been locked in for months. I just thought, well, there's no way that I can cancel.
I remember talking to you because I had to like – I got called away for some reason and I had to like – I can't remember what it was, but it was just like, oh, it was a work thing. I had to go – and then you were like, I can't be the second person to pull out of this thing. I'm just going to plug my butt and head in there.
And I remember I was so ill and I was in the bathroom sort of 5 a.m. and my then husband said to me, you know, I came to bed and went, oh, God, I've got to go to this lunch. I can't get out of it. And I explained it. And he's described it as – he was laughing and he said, oh, so basically this is the equivalent. If you pull out of this, it's like basically letting down the kitty at the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Like, yes, it is. So I just sort of struggled through. It was actually a really lovely lunch, but I just was sort of in a state of nervous terror the entire time.
I love that I get the towels and, you know, after all your efforts, I still get the hand towels.
Well, I think Julie probably knows enough about me to know that there was a risk of me
in the bin.
Them.
Sorry, Nana.
Yeah, and they were Nana's, you know, Nana put great effort and Julie's obviously looked after them. How nice that she thought that you were the person to bequeath them to.
Quality lady. Mm-hmm. Quality lady.
Speaking of quality, I watched the finale of The Bachelorette last night.
Jeez, what a lovely segue. Oh, hey, hang on. Here's the card.
Oh.
For Julie, with love from Nana.
Oh. Maybe I should give that back to her at least.
Oh, my God. That's wonderful. Sorry. The Bachelorette. Sad news about the Sydney show that we did, the live show, is that the audio didn't work out. So all of the incredibly indiscreet things you said about your private life
So the good news is we can just do
check
the whole
Australian.
Thing
they'll probably publish it anyway yeah, with a picture of you looking unsightly.
Yeah, so we don't have any audio of that, but
in that show, Sales went just on and then on and on a bit more about The Bachelorette and how she loves it. And, you know, then it turned out that half the people in the audience also are loving it.
Yeah, because I mentioned a character called Jared and there was an audible reaction in the audience, so clearly other people were watching it. Look, to recap, because there's only a handful of people at the shows in Sydney and lots more of you listen out there further afield, my thinking about The Bachelorette is, I quite like a bit of trash TV because I have a very serious job.
No, really?
And I like to be able to just zone out. And, you know, you have problems with it because it's anti-feminist and all that sort of stuff, and I'm not going to...
I have fewer problems with The Bachelorette than I have with The Bachelor, which right. I just, you know, oh.
Right. But the... Basically, you know, and somebody had said that they thought The Bachelorette was the sort of modern day Pride and Prejudice, you know, where we're all the us as
when
the TV viewers.
When she says somebody, she means she said that. You said that.
No,
didn't
you? A chatter said it. I'm paraphrasing right. Somebody else said. Yeah. And in fact, I noticed Hugh Parkinson, who does those little videos for Insiders, did a Pride and Prejudice ripoff using The Bachelorette.
Oh, did he? God, he's a genius, that guy.
Anyway, I have found it very sort of amusing because there's this guy in it called Jared who is just awfully intense, and there was an excruciating scene where he gave her a pot full of dirt and they each had a pot full of dirt and he said, let's grow something together. And he was just overly intense and overly invested. But actually, watching the finale last night, I felt terrible because, I mean, I've had a lot of laughs at that guy's expense, but he was properly gutted. I hope that they provide psychological counselling to people who go on that show.
It's all right. It's not like anybody saw him be humiliated.
It was
so. What was he? I don't. Was it down to him and another guy?
Yeah, in my view, pretty unappealing guy. The brother of Craig Laundy, the federal MP. His name's Stu Laundy.
All right. Well, at least there's some hotel money available to be a successful applicant.
So she picked Stu Laundy, but Jared had sort of really gotten very invested and said, I'm in love with you and I've never felt like this about anyone in my life and blah, blah, blah. And look, clearly the way the show is set up, you know, you're sort of in this house and you're away from your friends and family and it becomes a very intense thing. I'm sure it's crafted and you're thrown into these very romantic scenarios. I'm sure it's crafted really.
So romantic because there's just you, your beloved, a cold bottle of wine and eight cameras.
Well, there was a great bit last night where Stu Laundy, he was saying to Sophie, I need to tell you how I feel, but I just feel so worried because
exposed.
I have yeah, he said I have four children and I don't want to embarrass them. Said
too
right,
late. Said Stu.
Said right before he bloody tongue patches a former reality TV star while lying in a hammock on a dating program. Like, mate, I think the horse
should
has
be
bolted.
The next Bachelorette. And the whole, like, your cast of suitors should be entirely made up of, like, your fan club. So, like, retired English teachers from Wentworth Falls.
And we just shoot
like 80 going, like, oh, I don't mind a bit of that bloody redhead on the news program.
And date nights, like the guy going, look, I've booked us a harbour cruise and then a beautiful place for dinner. And I'm like, ah. Can we just stay home and watch TV? I hate going out.
Yeah. Also, I'll need to be in bed by 1 minute past nine. Yeah, in my granny undies. I'll be reading, by the way, so there'll be nothing going on.
Actually, a woman called Kerry Sackville wrote a quite good column yesterday about watching an older woman do The Bachelorette because Sophie Monk's in her late 30s and the other ones have been in their late 20s. And it was quite interesting. She said, I've never seen any of the others, but she said in the other ones, the young women have like a smorgasbord of really lovely men because there's much more available men. And so she said the older one, she said it's a taste of what life's like for us older dating women. And in fact, the final three guys.
People who used to be married to your friends.
Yeah, that's all right. Oh, wow, that's a depressing thought. She said the three guys who were left typify exactly all the types that you can have when you're an older single person. First guy, who for anyone who watched the show is Apollo, is the dude who is just the sort of good-looking party boy, but you know, never going to commit. Second guy, who's Jared, is the guy who seems sort of nice on the surface, but just overly controlling and just overly intense. And you know, after one date, they're sort of, you know, totally in love with you and just a bit too much and crazy stalker-like person. And the third guy is still married. Stu Laundy, still married and has had a vasectomy, even though she says she wants to settle down and have four kids.
Right, so that's the guy who – right, I did see a little clip of it that was awesome where they were in some sort of contrived romantic setting, and he then revealed that he'd had the snip, and she was actually, her reaction was really good. She just went, "Oh, fuck," you know, to the camera. Anyway, yeah, God. All right. Well, maybe.
Oh, hey. Look, but you know, as I said, my enjoyment of it was destroyed by the destruction of that poor, hapless.
But how you wished all hell to rain down on his skull. Like when I last talked to you about this, you were like, I will watch this show to its conclusion so that I can see him stomped into a pulpy, hearty, bleedy mess. And now you're like, oh, that guy. Maybe he's still available, sales. Give him a call.
Watching him stomped into a bleeding mess wasn't the fun I thought it would be.
Oh my God. So what about how like your main, what I love, what I do retain about your hatred of this guy on The Bachelorette is that your signature, the point at which you developed a problem with him was the point at which he said something like, I'm the kind of guy who we're out for dinner, you know, I say, oh, do you want to have dessert? And you say, no, I don't really feel in the mood for dessert. And then you pop off to the bathroom and come back to find that he's actually ordered dessert.
He had never done that in the show, but I just, his type was familiar to me. I've seen this type of guy before, which was, that type of thing where it's like controlling behaviour dressed up as being nice. Like, yeah. I know what you need better than you know what you need. I find it very, very annoying trait for people to have. Because then if you say, oh, well, actually, I don't want the dessert. I said I didn't want dessert. You look like the asshole because you're the one who's then being difficult and whatnot.
Just so never going to date you. Right. So this reminds me, while we're talking about dating scenarios that turn out incredibly well.
We're going to go into your dating life. Yeah.
No, we are not. I've been listening to, in fact, I have now listened to the whole of Dirty John.
Oh, awesome, because I am up to episode 5. Care to tell our listeners what Dirty John is?
Okay, so it's an American podcast, and it's a true story, and it's reported by this guy from the LA Times who tells the story of this woman who's like a successful interior designer, and she's gone through a couple of husbands, she's got adult kids, and she is on a dating website, and she starts exchanging messages with this guy called John, who's kind of like handsome, he's an anesthesiologist or a doctor of some kind, anesthetist, I should say, and they go out on a couple of dates, and you know, kind of not perfect at first, but then they kind of fall wildly in love, and then she starts to notice weird things about him. Like she doesn't quite know where he works. He wears scrubs all the time, but he doesn't seem to really have any other clothes. He says he's got like houses all across California, but there's no evidence of him really having any money. He's constantly borrowing her car, and they're just not really quite, and her children loathe him. And so the whole podcast really is about the gradual discovery about this guy's background, some quite extraordinary things happen. But it's like a classic kind of gaslight situation.
Yeah, exactly. It's certainly holding my interest. It's well done. One of the things I find fascinating about it is just the difference between your sort of regular brain and your romance brain, and what it is that, so this woman clearly is a really nice person, very bright, very successful and good at what she does. And yet this guy, she comes to understand that his background is diabolical. If you can hear that.
Yeah, welcome to your new neighbourhood, Sales. As the Daily Mail reported, Sales has bought a house in Stanmore, a suburb where property values are blah, 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 despite it being under the flight path and close to Annabelle Crabb's house.
I love how they identified that as the two chief setbacks of this neighbourhood, flight noise and Annabelle Crabb. She comes to know this guy's background, that he's a complete manipulator and charlatan, and she has an opportunity to escape, and yet she does not. And they sort of go into that in quite a bit of depth about what it is that basically has caused her to not leave him. But it just is that thing where, I mean, you see it all the time, not even with people that aren't sinister, where you just think, wow, why do you stay in that relationship? Or why are you with that person? Or why do you find that person attractive? Like, say, Melania and Donald Trump, how could you possibly find that person attractive? It's just such a mystery, all of that sort of thing.
Although you think with Donald Trump, I reckon, like, she probably went into that marriage expecting it to be a bit different from what it's turned out to be.
God, yeah.
So you reckon?
And surely, I mean, I guess money does strange things to people where they
find... I think that, yeah, well, I would hate to speculate, but surely.
So are you liking Dirty John?
Yeah. I listened to it all really quickly and it is like it does have a resolution, like it's not okay. One of these, oh, you know, it ends up in the air. It doesn't
right.
End like that at all. And I'm really interested in her behaviour throughout, and also, you know, it's one of those circumstances where the family could not be more clear and they actually unearth all this stuff that's undeniable, but she's still in this sort of state of liminance and she can't reconcile this guy that she's with who's incredibly wonderful to her, although, like, he really turns pretty awful when cracks start to appear, but then he comes back and he's incredibly nice again. And yeah, it is such an old story. What it reminded me of is this great book written by Kay Schubach. Did you ever read that one? It's called Perfect Stranger. She's a Sydney woman and writer who fell in love with very suddenly, like met in a cafe and was just totally immediately drawn to this guy called Simon, who she met, and she was in a relationship living with this guy, and this Simon just swept her off her feet, and within a month she's broken up with her boyfriend. You know, she's got to help
this
guy.
Is this a novel or is this true?
No, it's a true story. Yeah. And then he turns out to be this like serial bad boy. He's just got out of prison and that's why they've met. But he's a kind of stalker, violent. He'd been in prison, I think, on drug-related offences. But anyway, it's a terrifying, terrifying story because he becomes incredibly violent and domineering and possessive. And she's the fascinating part about the book is her narration in retrospect of the gradual surrender of her will and sense of independence. And she's like a really smart businesswoman and she finds herself being corroded because he's so forceful. Anyway, this guy, so Simon, her boyfriend, eventually was convicted of doing the same thing to at least one other woman and is in prison. And in fact, he had his parole hearing the other day. And I think, yeah, but it's a chilling book. But
was she able to identify what it was that sort of kept her there or attracted her to him? Or?
So one of the things that she'd been talking about with her boyfriend was, you know, having a baby. She really wanted to have a baby, and this guy was just full of false promises, including, oh, you know, we'll have a baby, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And she did actually get pregnant at one point. So I'm sure that that was part of it. But it's just, it really reinforced to me the fact that, like, this stuff happens to people who are smart and independent and, you know, like there's no real delineating factor in terms of, you know, predisposition or personality or whatever. Like, it's just this quite extraordinary story. And that element of the Dirty John podcast is sort of exactly the same. And remember that time a couple of months ago where there was that woman who wrote a magazine article about...
Stephanie Wood, I was just
Stephanie
thinking about
Wood, it. Yeah. It's just...
We talked about that on the podcast before. Basically, it's another sort of classic gaslighting scenario where she's dating this guy, turns out to have a whole another life and girlfriend and family. But it's also, there's a lot of examples of where there's slightly weird and dodgy behaviour, but she sort of excuses it. And when you call him out on it, I mean, manipulative people are often like this. You call them out on their behaviour and they put it back on you.
Right.
Or they accuse you of being too suspicious.
This is what happens in Dirty John. Like, and she says, oh, look, he had an explanation for everything. Mm. Now, if you step outside that sort of hormonal liminance world, you know, you can kind of look at it and go, well, that is absolute crap. Mm. But I mean, when you're in it, because you've invested so much hope and love in this project, you know, like, it's hard to stepping away is not just losing that person, it's also admitting that everything you've put into that relationship has been a waste, like you've got to write it off. And I think...
as with much in life too, things aren't always all good or all bad.
Yeah.
So you can be going out with somebody that has, you know, issues or substance abuse problems or just some nasty personal qualities, but also is really funny and great company and really smart and you really like hanging around with them. And, you know, so you'd be constantly sort of thinking, I'm sure, oh, well, maybe if he just, you know, maybe, because in Dirty John, he ends up saying to her, oh, well, I've never felt like this about anyone. And so, you know, you've got to help me sort of get my stuff together. And so she's then thinking, well, you know, maybe I am the first person who's going to help him reform his ways. And so you buy into that sort of redemption narrative. And
you know. Also, I think because you're so habitually and automatically as a human being, you associate intimacy with truth, like with intimacy with knowing somebody and believing them and trusting them. You know? So the discovery that you can be intimate with somebody but also just – them be a complete stranger to you at the same time is really scary and awkward. And if you can find any explanation that removes that as a possibility, then you'll take it, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think if you yourself are a nice person who wouldn't treat somebody like that, it can be hard to actually think, what? Like, then no, surely not. How's that even possible, you know? So, but look, it's very interesting. It's sort of a mystery, but the thing I find most mysterious is just the psychology of human beings and, you know, why they make the decisions that they make. Do you know something actually that I'm finding a bit weird, but I don't know if it's just me. You know when you listen to a podcast, usually there's an ad at the start and an ad in the middle. And that does not bother me in the slightest, because I think, say, you know, Alec Baldwin's podcast or The Dollop or whatever, if I'm going to listen to The Dollop and I get a lot of enjoyment out of those guys, if they want to plug whatever they plug or if they want to pitch whatever they pitch, that's fine. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. But Dirty John, I mean, this feels like there's a lot of ads.
Yeah. Well, I think what I love about those American podcast platforms is they all take the same ads as well. Like, and I'm like, guys, I'm not going to get a delivery from Blue Apron, okay? I live in Sydney. Just like, by the time your lentil salad arrives from Blue Apron in, you know, San Jose, it's not going to be nice anymore.
And look, those mattresses sound fantastic. I'd love a great mattress.
Obsessively engineered. Like, well, I don't know. Post one of those to me. Let's see how that flies. It's so funny, isn't it? Because now that these things have global audiences, it's just sort of ludicrous. But anyway, it must be working. My favourite one is like Malcolm Gladwell, who's sponsored by Chloe or no, it's Chanel. And he's like, well, back to gritty race relations in, you know, segregationist America after this word from our sponsor, it's Chanel. Weird.
The Dirty John one, it feels like there's probably like four blocks of ads per episode, which I find a bit crazy. Hey, do you know what I'm going to have to – I just realised reaching around behind my back, what I'm going to have to get sorted before I can get gaslit. Look at this scenario I've got going on with my chair.
Sorry, she's got a lot of big underpant coming out of the top of her jeans. Oh my God. I thought is this about to be like an ad for Bonds undies or something? Well, I've struggled for years with giant pants that come out of my jeans at inopportune moments. Imagine my delight when I discovered the barely there range from Bonds.
What about something like, you know, for years I've struggled to get a date and I've never understood why. I'm smart, I'm attractive.
About half an acre of underpants, mate. Like, there's a start.
When my friend told me that my giant granny undies had been hanging out the back of my jeans, all of a sudden I thought, yes, maybe this is it. Now, speaking of The Dollop, has that live show happened yet?
Yes, I went to see it the other night.
How was it?
I didn't love it. I did not love it. And that breaks my freaking heart because I bought about 24 tickets. In fact, there was this fabulous Chat 10 moment because I had two left over in the end, which, by the way, I didn't actually have left over. I miscalculated. So I gave away two tickets on the Facebook group.
And then had to buy two more.
Yeah. Oh, but also it was so sold out. Right. And then we were two tickets short. I'm like, holy shit, I've completely buggered it up.
So what did you do?
Well, Jeremy, because he's excellent, said, well, why don't I pop into the box office and just see if they've had any returns? Because I was just like, I was basically, well, I won't go. And so he went in there and they said, and they had just had some guest who had just rung up and said, I'm not coming. And so he just bought those two tickets. He like literally was there at the exact second. And then anyway, so it worked out fine. Just totally unlikely resolution to an otherwise terrible situation, largely engineered by my own inadequacy. But the great thing was that I put these tickets up. This is why chatters are so awesome. Put these tickets up and this woman called Mel like just responded in about 10 seconds, just said, oh, great, I would love those tickets, which is fine. And then like a minute later, there's a woman called Mari who's just like, oh, my God, oh, look, if that falls through or if that doesn't pan out, please, me next because, you know, I've been trying to get a ticket for blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so Mel from afar is watching all of this and because she's an incredible sweetie and a chatter, she just contacts Mari and says, do you want the other ticket? Like, do you want to come as my date? No. And so they've made friends.
Oh, so nice. Yeah. And did you get to meet them all?
Sure did. Unfortunately, I had to spin to the hairdresser and I had my hair straightened for like, I not really recreational reasons. I washed it again straight away, so it's now back to its normal fur ball status. But nobody recognised me. Like, so I actually went in to meet Gwen and a bunch of other people, and I could not get a hello from anyone that I even really know really well. And when Mel and Mari came in looking for me, like, I was looking at them going like, oh, are they the chatters? And they were looking straight at me, nothing.
Wow, yep. That's so interesting. So obviously yep. your chief recognisability thing is that curly hair.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow,
yeah.
There
it's
you go.
It's just this merkin on my head.
For me, it's the big undies.
The merkin is working.
It's the undies.
It's the working merkin.
So why didn't you like the show so much?
So
was it just them or did they have Will Anderson on as well? Because they sometimes...
No, they had this other comedian whose name is Hammo.
Yeah, of course it is.
Of course it's Hammo.
Does he host an FM radio show called Hammo and the Chick?
I think so.
Yeah, right, I'm sure.
But anyway, so they did some stand-up first, Dave and Gary.
Oh, yeah.
And that was great. I really enjoyed that. I continue to be rusted on super fans of the podcast, but it was just one of those nights where I didn't feel like it really came together. The story that they chose as well was about like treatment of women in a penal colony in Tasmania. And to be honest, like it was just a bit like I found it super blokey and they were all cracking jokes about like the terrible things that are happening to these women. And I was just like, what they do is so well observed usually, and they balance it so well. And like, I think they're super aware of the blokey factor and like they are actually really evolved guys. But on this occasion, there was the three of them and they were all, I didn't love the dynamic with the third person either. So,
and what's the audience demographic like for them?
Looking around, it was like lots of women there. Like it wasn't, it's not just a guy thing.
Of like our age or what's the
sort of? Yeah, I think so. Right. Like I obviously wasn't being closely observant enough. I was too busy like absolutely crapping my dacks about whether we had enough tickets. I really liked seeing them. It was really interesting to watch them. And there were some like great moments. Mm. But it wasn't one of those storylines where I'm just like, oh, that was amazing. It sort of lacked a bit of clarity as to where it was going. It wasn't apparent what the theme was. And the theme sort of ended up being Tasmania and homosexuality because it was about like lesbian encounters in the female factory, which is what they call this facility in sort of colonial times. Anyway, I don't know. Just it didn't hit my buttons, and I ended up having to leave early because I had to sort out kids and stuff. So
right,
yeah. However, it absolutely does not affect my enthusiasm for the podcast and my determination to continue listening to it. It's just like I guess sometimes with something as finely calibrated as that, like it's quite magical when it really really works.
Yeah.
And I think that you can, because it's so exciting to see them live, you know, that covers over a bit of like something that is a bit off.
Look, and I'm sure it's like us where sometimes you do an episode and it's just absolutely hilarious and you go off on a tangent and it just really works. And then sometimes you're like, oh, yeah, that was all right. Yeah. Just, you know, swings
you
around.
You go home and like flog yourself with a like damp Hessian lash.
I'm like, I cry myself to sleep. Like, oh, I didn't know my undies hung out of my jeans.
Oh, what I know is that nobody really asked you to make that observation about your underpants. You're just like, oh,
there's got to be a good 20 centimetres hanging out.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I think it's less, the problem is less the undies, but more the low cut of the jeans is what I suggest.
See, you've got to shop together. You've got to have a joined up thinking in your downstairs department. Wow.
Right.
Good luck finding a date real soon.
I think we should end this episode there and leave people with that visual. See you later.
Bye.